Night and day, light and dark. As Kronos waited in the cleft, sickle in hand, all creation held its breath. I say all creation, for Uranos and Gaia and their offspring were not the only beings to have reproduced. Others had multiplied and propagated too, with Erebus and Nyx, the most productive by far. They had many children, some terrible, some admirable, and some lovely. We have already seen how they gave birth to Hemera and Aether. But then Nyx, without Erebus's help, gave birth to Moros, or Doom, who was to become the most feared entity in creation. Doom comes to every creature, mortal or immortal, but is always hidden. Even the immortals feared Doom's all-powerful, all-knowing control over the cosmos. After Moros came a great rush of offspring, one after the other, like a monstrous airborne invasion. First came Apate, deceit, whom the Romans called Fros, from whom we derive the words fraud, fraudulent, and fraudster. She scuttled off to Crete, where she bided her time. Geras, old age, was born next, not necessarily so fearful a demon as we might think today. While Geras might take away suppleness, youth, and agility, for the Greeks he more than made up for it by conferring dignity, wisdom, and authority. Senectus is his Roman name, a word that shares the same root as senior and senate, and less happily, senile. A pair of perfectly ghastly twins were next, Oisis, Miseria in Latin, the spirit of misery, depression, and anxiety, and her cruel brother Momos, the spiteful personification of mockery, scorn, and blame. Momos, Momus to the Romans, would go on to be worshipped in a serio-comic literary way as the guiding spirit of satire. Aesop incorporated him into some of his fables, and he is the hero of a lost play by Sophocles. Nyx and Erebus were just getting into their stride. Their next child, Eris, discordia, strife, lay behind all disagreements, divorces, scraps, skirmishes, fights, battles, and wars. It was her malicious wedding present, the legendary apple of discord, that brought about the Trojan War, though that epic clash of arms was a long, long way in the future. Strife's sister, Nemesis, was the embodiment of retribution, that remorseless strand of cosmic justice that punishes presumptuous, overreaching ambition, the vice that the Greeks called hubris. Nemesis has elements in common with the Eastern idea of karma, and we use her today to suggest the fateful, retributive opposition the lofty and wicked will one day meet and which will bring them down. I suppose you could say Holmes was Moriarty's nemesis, Bond was Blofeld's, and Jerry was Tom's. The Romans, perhaps confusingly, called nemesis invidia, which is also the Latin for envy. Erebus and Nyx also gave birth to Charon, whose infamy would grow once he took up his duties as ferryman for the dead. Hypnos, the personification of sleep, was born to them too. They were also the progenitor of the Oneroi, thousands of beings charged with the making and bringing of dreams to the sleeping. Amongst the Oneroi, whose names are known to us, were Phobetor, god of nightmares, and Phantasos, responsible for the fantastic manner in which one thing turns into another in dreams. They worked under the supervision of Hypnos's son Morpheus, whose name itself suggests the morphing, shifting shapes of the dream world. Neil Gaiman's Sandman character Dream is also known as Morpheus, and formed the inspiration for the character Morpheus played by Lawrence Fishburne in the Wachowskis' Matrix films. Morphine, fantasy, hypnotic, oneiromancy, the interpretation of dreams, and many other verbal descendants of Greek sleep have survived into our language. Sleep's brother, Thanatos, death himself, gives us the word euthanasia, good death. The Romans called him Mors, of mortals, mortuaries, and mortification. These new beings were frightening and loathsome in the extreme. They left on creation a terrible but necessary mark, for the world seems never to offer anything worthwhile without also providing a dreadful opposite. There were, however, three lovely exceptions. Three beautiful sisters, the Hesperides, nymphs of the west and daughters of the evening. They heralded the daily arrival of their mother and father, but with the soft gold of the gloaming rather than the dread black of night. Their time is what movie cameramen today call magic hour, when the light is at its most beguiling and beautiful. Well, there were perhaps four exceptions. Hypnos is not so bad after all. The longer you live, the fonder you become of him. And talking of living long, perhaps Geras isn't too awful either. So, five exceptions. These, then, were the offspring of Nyx and Erebus, who even now were shrouding the earth in the darkness of night as Gaia lay waiting for her husband for what she hoped would be the last time, and Cronos lurked in the shadows of that recess in Mount Othrys, keeping a firm grip on his great scythe.